Hello, advanced listeners, and welcome back to Advanced. Now, we are on our society article for the month of August, and we have been looking at translating one of the world's most popular books, and that is the Bible. And we're learning how technology has been able to transform the ancient art of Bible translation. In the past, many people would have to handwrite the Bible word by word, and it would take a long time, perhaps 25 to 30 years. Well, we've gone from handwriting the Bible to having the printing press that sped up the translation of the Bible, and now today we have the internet. Now, joining me are two great panelists that were here yesterday, and so I want to thank them for coming back. But to my left, I have...
Hello, everybody. This is Josh. I'm very glad to be back here talking to you today about translations.
Thanks, Josh.
Hi, everyone. It's Albert, and I have to say we are probably the dream team.
Oh, yeah. Let's see if we can make this happen again in the future. Well, Josh, what was something that you learned from yesterday?
Well, I learned that we have sort of a shift of the way that we are able to do worldwide translation. So instead of sending a lot of people and a lot of money in order to build buildings and to train people to assist with translations, we are now able to be in the point where we can, through technology, assist local people to do their own translations, which is quite a big difference.
Right, exactly. What about you, Albert?
Well, yesterday we mentioned how there are volunteers worldwide, and they're the backbone of the association. And they said there's 7,000 volunteers worldwide, and that, for me, it's just so beautiful. There's like so many people willing to take the time out of their day and help out with this. And it just goes to show you, like, you know, when people are working together, you can make great things happen. And I feel like, you know, they're doing something they're passionate about that's important, and trying to get this book to every person in the world.
And it's very interesting because they need these volunteers because they have a very big goal. Their ambitious goal is to have the Bible translated by 2025 into at least 7,000 languages spoken worldwide, which is a huge goal. But as we've seen, they have been doing great over the last 2 years. They've been able to translate it in already 600 different languages, hoping for another 400 later this year. So they are on track, heading towards their goal there. And we're going to learn a little bit more about the backbone of Wycliffe Associates and how they're able to make this happen. So why don't we get into our first reading for today? If you are with your magazine, please turn to page 33. And if you have your electronic device, please turn and join us as we look at the left column for our second day.
We want to give as many people as we can that opportunity to know about and accept Christ into their lives, said Carlisle Kilmore, 78, a retired software developer from New York, who helped the ministry's annual auction raise $65,000 earlier this year. A shared sense of purpose has nurtured friendships. The women who work in the postage stamp ministry, for example, toil side by side from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., Monday through Thursday, exhibiting the patience of Job as they sort thousands of donated stamps by color, type, year, and whether they are canceled. They recharge by taking weekend trips together and participating in social activities. Recently, they saw manatees at Blue Spring State Park in Volusia County. On campus, they go to movies, potlucks, and game nights, and, of course, prayer services. Volunteers operate in 76 countries, including Southeast Asia, the South Pacific, Africa, and South America, some where Christians are persecuted. The nature of our work takes us into places that are risky, Smith said. There's worse ways to lose your life.
Hello, Hello, listeners. We are looking at the world's most popular book, the Bible, and how it's being translated a lot faster than it used to be. And much of this is due to Wycliffe Associates, formerly Wycliffe Bible Translators, that over the last 50 years have really played a large part in translating the Bible into different languages around the world. Now, they are made up of 7,000 volunteers worldwide who also work with local translators to translate the Bible into these local languages. And these volunteers do a variety of jobs, including training some of the different volunteers that come on board. And in our paragraph, or our first paragraph today, we are introduced to one of them. We are introduced to Carlisle Kilmore, who is 78 years old. He's a retired software developer from New York. And what does he say, Josh?
Well, he says that they want to give as many people as they can the opportunity to know about and accept Christ into their lives.
So Carlisle is a Christian, and he believes that translation of the Bible is important so that many other people may know about Jesus Christ and learn who he is. Now, it's interesting to see that he previously was a software developer from New York. So he has experience in technology, yeah, in computerization, and he's able to use that skill to help this organization. In fact, he did something a little bit more than that.
This is amazing. He helped raise $65,000 earlier this year. And I really like how in day one we were looking at, you know, the change and their goal and what they're doing differently. And day two, we're looking at the people behind it. It's so nice. It's like revealing the curtain to see what's behind. And, you know, initially yesterday when I heard like 7,000 volunteers, I'm like, wow, that's a lot of people. But it's actually not, because there are a lot of people doing behind the scenes, working with the foundation, you know, getting support, getting donations to run and fund this organization to get the word out. There's a lot of jobs that need to be done. And, you know, we have people like him doing it.
Right. And it's interesting to see that they have an annual auction. So this is something that happens every year to raise funds for the organization. And this time they were able to raise $65,000. And there seems to be a shared sense of purpose for their goal. Josh, what do we learn in this next sentence?
So here we learn that a shared sense of purpose has nurtured friendships.
Right. And what does nurtured mean?
Well, to nurture something is to help. It could be either a plan or a person to be developed, or to develop and to be successful. So we talk about nurturing a child,
ooh,
right?
Yeah.
And so help raising them and to be a successful adult. We can also talk about nurturing projects. So a project like a translation project, where you start off at the very beginning where you don't have a whole lot of maybe resources or a whole lot of results, nurturing that into a large organization or something that does like a big completion.
Right. And I think oftentimes friendships develop once we are doing something over a shared sense of purpose, right?
Yeah, that's very true. And I think one difference that I have to remind myself, like the difference between raising something like a plant versus mm-hmm. nurturing it, it's just like raising it is just letting it just grow. But then like Josh pointed out earlier, if you nurture it, it'll, you know, help it develop and become successful.
Right. So you're responding perhaps to things that are happening and adjusting accordingly as well.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we learn about some of the women who help Wycliffe Associates. They work in the postage stamp ministry. Now, a postage stamp ministry is where the volunteers, they will collect stamps from people around the world. And what they do is that they use these stamps, they clean these stamps from the envelopes that they're given, and believe it or not, people still collect stamps nowadays. There's many different things to collect. You could collect coins, for example, and stamps are also one of those things. So in fact, stamps are quite valuable, right? They are wanted by different dealers, what we call stamp dealers, around the world. And so if you're able to get these stamps and present them very nicely, not torn, not screwed up, then the stamp dealers will pay a lot of money for them. So this is another form of fundraising for this organization. Now, so what they do is they work together, and I think we have a picture here on page 33. We can see them. Albert, could you read underneath the caption underneath the photo?
Yes. So volunteers in the postage stamp ministry at Wycliffe Associates, the stamps are sold to benefit the organization's work of helping translate the Bible around the world. Now, I really like how earlier you said still collect stamps. I'm surprised that people even collect it to begin with. But the more I thought about it, it's just like any kind of hobby. It's almost kind of like Pokemon Go.
Right.
Because you have to go to a certain area to unlock it. And when, you know, in the States, you can't buy a stamp from another state or county or city that's too far away from you. And the only way to get it is maybe by trading it or collecting it or sending a post to someone else living in somewhere else. And for them, these things become valuable because they go out of circulation.
Exactly. Actually, as a child, I used to collect stamps, and we even went to fairs, stamp fairs, where you could go and buy very unique stamps, you know, because the thing is, the post office will print different stamps every year. Mm-hmm. So they become unique, and I wouldn't say antique, but they become a collector's item.
Right. They would have like special editions for movies or like presidents or someone. Did you have a favorite? Do you still have any of these?
No, I don't. But I did always like the ones that had Queen Elizabeth on them.
Ooh, fancy.
Yeah. So there we go. You can still use stamp collecting as a fundraising, and this is what the postage stamp ministry does. And so these women have been able to nurture friendships because together they do what, Josh?
Well, they toil side by side. So to toil just means to work very hard, and they sit and work next to each other very hard from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday, and they also exhibit the patience of Job.
Wow. What does the patience of Job mean, Albert?
Well, it's an idiom, and it's a Bible reference. It's the ability to remain patient and do what you think you should do despite having many problems.
Right. So it's to persevere, right, and to overcome. Well, why are they toiling so hard? Because they need to sort through, and that means to go through particularly donated stamps by color. So they need to put them into different areas, color, type, and year, and whether they are canceled, that means whether they are no longer in operation. This way, they're able to send them to the correct stamp dealers and exchange that for the money that they're using to fundraise. There are some other things, though, that they do. They don't only toil together. They also have a little bit of fun together, Josh. What do they do?
Well, so they recharge, which is what we say when you need to recharge your battery, but also recharge yourself, right? Mm. So you're working really hard all week long and you need to do something a little bit fun in order to re-energize yourself. And what they do is they take weekend trips and participate in social activities.
Right.
And so and here in the article, we see that one of the trips was that they saw manatees, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, what is a manatee?
So a manatee is not really very pretty. It's kind of
manatee would take offense to that.
Well, it's kind of a strange looking animal. Another word for manatee is a sea cow. So it's a large sea mammal with a broad flat tail, looks similar to a small whale. But the way that manatees move in the water, some people thought that inspired the myth of the mermaid, because people would see sort of this like face looking thing.
Ooh.
With a long slender body and a tail coming out the back.
Ooh,
of the water.
Never knew that.
I can see that. I think my first time to see manatees was about 2 years ago in the Singapore Aquarium. Yeah, I had never seen them before that, and I was fascinated by them. I think I watched them for maybe 30 to 40 minutes.
Wow.
Because it was the first time I'd seen them.
Sure.
I've never seen them in person. I really got to go look up on YouTube. Are they as ugly as Josh mentioned?
No, well, they move very beautifully through the water.
They do move very beautifully through the water.
Very calm animals, and, you know, they just chew away at the algae in the mm-hmm. in the tank. And yeah, I think one of the things is they don't really move quickly or sporadically at all. They're
okay.
They flow very nicely through the water.
Wow.
So there's the manatee. If you get to see them, really encourage you to have a look at them. And they were able to do so recently when they went to visit a state park. Now, I wanted to ask you, gentlemen, what do you like to do to recharge? Because I think it's important for all of us to be able to recharge after a busy time.
Well, I don't play Pokemon Go. But I do like to, I like to go hiking.
Mm.
I like to play guitar.
Mm-hmm.
I do like to watch movies. And so any of those things, but usually anything in the outdoors, if I can get outside, get some fresh air, a little bit of exercise, I find that really energizing for me. Although I shouldn't disparage Pokemon Go, because many people also run around outside and get exercise while they're also playing a game, which I think is a great pastime.
Right. It has caused some people to get up off the couch and move around, right?
Mm-hmm.
What
right.
about you, Albert?
I feel like this is a test, and I should say, well, I like to recharge by doing my office work and reading Advance magazine.
Well, this isn't separate to your work, separate to toiling away at your work.
Mm-hmm. I really like exploring Taiwan. I've only been here for 5 years, but there's tons of things to learn and tons of things to experience, and I look forward to that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. More than just night markets and heading out for dinner, right? There's a lot to explore. I think especially hiking wise, we are close to mountains here, close to the sea
right.
as well, and to enjoy nature. I like to recharge by getting out into nature myself, but also spending time with friends, whether it be at home or through coffee. I love coffee, or whether it be watching a good movie. But either of these ways, I think it's really important to, even though we are toiling away, it's also good to have a work-life balance and to be able to recharge as well. While these volunteers also recharge on campus, they are able to go to the movies, and they have potlucks and game nights. What is a potluck, Albert?
Well, a potluck is something super fun, and I feel like I encourage everyone to give it a try once. A potluck is a meal where all who attend bring a dish to share, so you get a variety of things. You know, someone may bring something from their culture or hometown that you would not usually pick up on or find at a restaurant. And I like how they say on campus, because you have to remember that they have a campus, basically what we call it. They have a facility, an area where they have people go there and help volunteer. And it's really nice. They have, like, it's very warm, and it feels like a tight community.
Right. Well, yep, they play games together, and they also pray together with their prayer services. But there are not only volunteers in their Florida campus, there are also volunteers around the world. In fact, how many countries do they operate in?
So they say that the volunteers will operate in 76 countries, including Southeast Asia, the South Pacific, Africa, and South America.
Right. Okay. So they're in a variety of places. In fact, some of these places, there are some things going on there, right, Albert?
Yeah. Christians are persecuted. And so I would say an easy way to define that is they're being discriminated against.
Due to their religion, right?
Right.
Okay. So it's not always having fun. Right? Not
sure.
Always being able to go to the movies and enjoy potlucks. But in fact, there are some dangerous and risky things to translation in these areas themselves.
Right. You know, some governments or people in that area or region do not take kindly to other people and them just wanting to share something.
That's right. And we see that it's not only just fun and games, not only going to movies and having potlucks or having game nights together. Part of their job is quite risky. And we learn from Bruce Smith, who is the president and CEO of Wycliffe Associates. He says the nature of our work takes us into places that are risky, okay, that are dangerous. But he goes on to say there's worse ways to lose your life. In other words, he's talking here, he's saying that he feels it's a privilege to be able to do something like this for what he believes is a big purpose.
So I just kind of wanted to point out to the readers here that in this article, it may not be totally clear because it was split between two different days, but here today we're talking about the volunteers that are on campus and living in an RV park that are doing these sort of like this work, fundraising, and these socializing together, right? But then We also know from yesterday that some of these residents who live in this RV park are what they call winter residents. Right?
Hmm.
And this is something that happens in Florida. It's people will go to Florida in the wintertime because the weather is so nice. And then when the summertime comes around, they'll go back home. So here, some of the volunteers will come from wherever they're at in their international occupations, being in other parts of the world that are dangerous, and they'll go back to Florida in order to spend the winter there with other volunteers and kind of recharge a little bit and do some work to do some fundraising. And then may also return to some of the overseas locations where they might be in danger for their beliefs.
Right, and I just want to add really quickly, it might sound odd to do this, but usually when you're retired, it's like, heck, why should I endure another freezing cold winter?
Sure.
Let's go to Florida. It's amazing.
Right. Mm-hmm. So Florida doesn't really have a winter.
They do, and not a cold one, at least.
Not a cold one.
It might be wet, and it might be it might be cool, but certainly not cold at all.
Yeah.
Right, so it's good for the bones. Okay. Well, we've been talking a lot about Wycliffe Associates, and so we're going to find a little bit more about how they came to be in our last reading for today.
Why it was founded. Wycliffe Associates was founded in 1967 by three men who saw that Bible translators were spending time on tasks such as constructing buildings and raising money, tasks that could better be accomplished by others working in support roles. In 2015, the nonprofit received $41.1 million in contributions and other revenue, and spent $27.6 million on translation ministry programs, according to its annual report. We have a God of love, and we want to give people peace of mind that they are forgiven for their wrongdoing, said Dia Terhar, 71, who lives near Toronto and handles sales for the stamp ministry. Once they learn about forgiveness and love, it can change their life. And it's nice to be able to spread that message.
Well, listeners, we have been looking at how Wycliffe Associates have been able to translate the world's most popular book, the Bible, and they have a goal of translating it into 7,000 languages worldwide by 2025, and they're well on their way to achieving that goal, and they've been able to do that whether through local translators in different countries or through their volunteers worldwide. Now, in our last reading for today, we look at why it was founded. Why was Wycliffe Associates founded? Well, why don't we find out a little bit more? How does our paragraph begin here, Albert?
Well, it was founded by three men in 1967 who saw that Bible translators were spending time on tasks such as constructing buildings and raising money. You know, just basically what we talked about in the first day, which is like building the infrastructure so you can make sure that you have just the resources and ability to continue and finish the task. So they were like, well, you know, how about we just, you know, get together and I feel like we can raise a better way to approach this.
Right. So actually, Wycliffe Bible translators began a lot earlier than that. But at that time, a lot of the translators had to take on different roles, not just translating the Bible, but also constructing building and raising money. So they had to be very multitasking. Right, but Wycliffe Associates, therefore, have been able to help the translators with that so that they take care of the support role. They take care of helping, constructing buildings, and raising money so that the translators can concentrate on translating the Bible. Well, what do we learn about the nonprofit in 2015, Josh?
Well, here it says the nonprofit, Wycliffe Associates, received $41.1 million U.S. dollars in contributions and other revenue, and spent about $27.6 million on translation ministry programs.
Okay, so when we say contributions, what is that, Albert?
Well, contribution is like a donation, you know, they just wanted to help them out, and they did so by giving them money.
Right, and what about revenue, Josh?
So revenue is income that a government or a company receives regularly. So not only are they a nonprofit association that receives donations, but they also then have other business industries, like, say, for example, maybe the sale of stamps that provides regular income for them year after year.
Right. Okay, good. And we learn from Dia Tahar. She's 71 years old. And what does she say?
Well, she shares this beautiful message about how they have a God of love and they want to give people peace of mind. You know, they want to share this and that they are forgiven for their wrongdoing.
Okay, so this is basically the core of the Christian message, right? About forgiveness and love and the ability of the forgiveness of sins through Jesus Christ's sacrifice on the cross. And that is what they are wanting to share with other people around the world by having the Bible translated into different languages and for people to be able to read about that themselves. Now, Dia Tahar is one of the volunteers, one of the backbones of Wycliffe Associates, who herself lives near Toronto, and her job is to handle the sales for the stamp ministry that we mentioned in the last column. And she goes on to say what, Josh?
Well, she says here that once they learn about forgiveness and love, it can change their life, and that it's nice to be able to spread that message.
So that is part of the reason about why she has joined in the efforts of Wycliffe Associates. She's willing to volunteer her time and help them with this so that they're able to translate the world's most popular book and be able to see it get into 7,000 different languages around the world. Well, listeners, you've joined us today to learn more about the process of how the Bible has been translated throughout time, from handwriting, being handwritten, to being printed, to using the technology today to see that many people know about the message and the content of the Bible, and just some of the volunteers that have spent their time doing that. Well, we would love to hear about you too. Maybe there's something that you are volunteering with and you are participating in and giving your time freely to as well. We would love to hear your stories about that. Make sure you check out our Facebook page, and also at the top of page 32, you see our QR code for the topic talks. Make sure you have a look at that as well, to increase your English vocabulary. But for now, this is Amanda,
Albert,
and Josh
saying goodbye.
Goodbye.